The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life, a life savings company for your journey to and through retirement.
I'm joined by Jack Horgan-Jones, political correspondent with the Irish Times, and Lynn Boylan, Sinn Féin MEP for Dublin. And there is a lot in the news today about presidential elections. And of course, today is the day that Sinn Féin are going to pick their candidate, pick whether or not they'll have their own candidate or go with a joint candidate of the left. And the Independent says Sinn Féin at odds on Áras race strategy. And within the paper, they then talk about how they are at odds. And they quote Lynn Boylan as saying that it's an interesting proposal that there would be a united left candidate. But she says she thinks it's a unique opportunity to promote a united Ireland and for Sinn Féin to run a candidate and to really make that the focus. Kind of hedging your bets, Lynn.
Well, that's why I'm actually shocked that the Indo would run a headline. It seems to be a bit of desperation, I think, or maybe a slow news day, because I thought I was hedging my bets in that response yesterday. But it seems that they're trying to create some sort of division between myself and Kathleen Funchen. Look, I'm more happy than anybody else to know that finally we will know today and there will be no more having to answer the question. I'm not a member of the Ord Cóirle, so I will find out at the same time as yourselves.
You must have a sense of the mood of the party. You are somebody who has your finger on the pulse. What are the tea leaves indicating?
I will be honest in saying that while there's not a division in the party, I think there are different opinions. People are, kind of looking at the option of weighing in behind a united left candidate, and that sends out a very strong message of a unified opposition. Do you mean a potential for an alternative government? But likewise, there's a lot of people, the whole reason of Sinn Féin is a united Ireland, who are saying we need someone who will focus very much on a united Ireland and really, sell that big idea and for the referendum that coming down the tracks. So, that's the conversation that's happening, but it's not a divisive conversation. It is actually people kind of weighing up the odds. And that was what was fed into the consultation process. A report has been carried out. That report will be presented to the Ord Cóirle today. So,
and is anybody doing high pressure lobbying or canvassing?
Not that I know of. They're not canvassing me. And, as I said, I keep people putting my name forward again, I think, is just to fill ink on paper, because I have no intention and never had any intention of contesting it.
Do you think that the party has lost out any ground in being slightly late to the party when it comes to the election?
No, I think this is very much the summer slow news. There's very little else happening. So papers have to, fill pages. I think when you're talking to most people, the public, they're not tuned into the presidential at the moment. They will once the nominations close, once they see who the candidates are.
But there's a sense of Jim Gavin and Heather Humphreys. There's a bit of a ball rolling already there, isn't there?
Is there? I don't know. Like, if you call
let's turn to the expert on all things political then.
By Jim.
Is there momentum happening in this election race that Sinn Féin is not in, Jack?
I tend to agree more with Lynn on this, that there is, and this is true of all elections, not just presidential elections, there's a reset that happens when the campaigns proper begin, and everything before that is, it's preamble. It doesn't mean it's entirely without value. So if you take, for example, let's say the Catherine Connolly campaign, there are a lot of tricky questions for her about her judgment when it pertains to things like the Syria trip, her ongoing association with Mick Wallace and Claire Daly. All these kind of things have now been ventilated over summer. And while I think some of the commentary around it may have damaged her in the eyes of some within the electorate, I think she's kind of come through it. So she's kind of crossed those kind of threshold issues, and, nothing major and new has emerged on them. So she's probably, there's a question over how long you can keep asking her. That's just one example. But look, we are heading into the campaign proper now. Has Sinn Féin lost ground by not being part of that conversation? I think it's more the case that Sinn Féin has been left, to my mind, with no 100% good option. I think that if Sinn Féin had the right candidate by now, Sinn Féin would have chosen that candidate and would be running somebody. I think that the path of least risk, or the path of kind of pain aversion for the party, is to back Catherine Connolly. And it's also the path that kind of aligns with the two strategic goals that Mary Lou McDonald has set out most consistently in recent weeks. Firstly, to keep Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael out of the IRS, and secondly, to get them out of government. So if you take those two arguments, then strengthening the Connolly campaign rather than running a Sinn Féin candidate by themselves increases the likelihood of that campaign going toe-to-toe with the two big parties. And then on the other hand, as Lynn was saying, you know, the prospect of a left unity campaign working in real life in a live fire electoral exercise, the last one that we're going to have before 2029 most likely, is something that maybe the electorate will be open to seeing and being messaged on.
Are there not two immediate obvious downsides from Sinn Féin's perspective on that? One, the loss of relevance, publicity and attention that you get from having your own campaign. And two, the first presidential election where a united Ireland is a bubbling issue and is already in the milieu, and them not having a prime role in it.
I think both those things are true, and that comes back to my point about there being kind of no perfect option for Sinn Féin here. No matter what it does, there will be costs as well as benefits, and I think that that's true on both fronts. But also, if they go with Catherine Connolly, which is what I suspect they will do, famous last words, you should never make a prediction, particularly on the morning of a decision, but if they go down that route, it also diminishes the risk of having a bad election. Let's not forget that while Mary Lou McDonald is a kind of generationally talented politician, in my view, she's also one that doesn't have a great electoral record with Sinn Féin. You know, you take 2020 out of the picture, but even 2020, you know, you could argue that was the great missed opportunity where the miscalculation around running so many candidates or not enough candidates came back to bite her. She hasn't delivered Sinn Féin in government. You know, the last set of election results wasn't good for Sinn Féin. So if they have a bad election in the presidential, does that increase the kind of murmurs around Mary Lou McDonald's leadership? Which brings me back to my core point, which is the path of least risk and the path of pain aversion is to back Catherine Connolly.
Well, this brings us back to hedging our bets. Is he right?
I mean, I think the key thing for Sinn Féin in any campaign, in the election campaign, regardless of the candidate, will be making the case that we do not want to have a Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael president in the Oras, that we've been served well by the current president, Michael D. Higgins. You know, I think most people would feel, you know, he portrays the values of the country. He is, you know, being put us proud when he speaks, and that there will be a choice, and the choice will be around whether or not, you know, you still support Ireland's neutrality, the United Ireland question, around Gaza and Palestine, and who portrays those values. And I think that's what the campaign will really be about. It'll be a choice of values, and do you want to have someone who, you know, is representative of the two parties that have been in government for a very long time and have presided over housing crisis, healthcare crisis, do you know what I mean, child poverty going through the roof as well, or do you, you know, want to have a president that's the alternative to that and is setting out a different vision for the future of Ireland? I mean, that because that's what a presidential campaign is about. I mean, they don't have executive powers, but they have got that gravitas that when they speak, you know, and people will listen to them. And what are the values that that candidate holds? So for me, that's what will be interesting about the campaign.
Well, on the list of those things that the nation is facing, you can probably add economic challenges as well, because there are speculations as to what the budget is likely to contain. And it is being described in The Independent as a bummer of a budget. And that's by their financial editor, Charlie Weston, who's with us this morning. Charlie, it looks like it's going to be a tighter budget than we would have had in previous years. And we're already seeing some of that tightening in the form of energy price hikes. The latest is SSE joining the list.
It is. We've had a flurry of price increases, you know, when we would have hoped that at the very least it would remain steady. So the winter is going to be difficult. I calculate that the different companies now that have announced price rises were, you know, SSE Airtricity came again yesterday. It was the second time this year, 9.5% increase. That's nearly 300,000 people affected by that one. It's electricity only on that this time, because they increased electricity and gas by, well, the electricity was 10.5% in April. That's going to add about €150 to the average bill on top of the 170 at the start of the year. Last week, we had Bord Gáis increasing electricity 13.5%. We had Flogas, small enough rise, but they're a small company, 7% electricity, and Energia at the 12%, they said some of their tariffs are going up by more. So the only good news really is that Electric Ireland, the biggest player in the market with more than 1 million electricity customers and 140,000 gas customers, is cutting its gas by 4%. Not huge, but positive. At least it's cutting it, and it has committed not to increase electricity prices. But for more than a million people, as you say, Anton, who are being told constantly that they're not going to get energy credits this year, we got 250 last year, and more than a million people then instead will have no energy credits, which we've got used to for the last 3 years, and instead they'll be paying more for electricity come October. Most of these increases go through from October. So, yeah, that's pretty damning, isn't it? You know, and they're blaming regulatory charges imposed by the regulator because we need to upgrade the grid, you know, the pylons, the wires, all of that needs to be upgraded because it's old, one, and two, because we need to facilitate more renewable energy on the system. We're getting more renewable energy, but the prices are going up, unfortunately. It's because everything is based on the price of wholesale gas.
And we're only a couple of weeks away from hearing what the budget is going to contain. And your analysis says that the last budget left the average middle income earner up by about 1,200 quid. Looks like we're not going to see anything like that. In fact, probably the opposite, given what the ESRI and the Central Bank and the Fiscal Advisory Council are saying.
Yeah, all these kind of, you know, think tanks and regulatory bodies are lining up to tell the government, you know, don't have it. We can't afford a generous budget. Too much uncertainty because of the man in charge in the White House, tariffs, etc. You know, the European economy, nothing to do with tariffs, but the European economy is not doing particularly well anyway. So, you know, the Central Bank, ESRI, the Fiscal Advisory Council set up after the financial crash to advise the government. They're all telling the government to be cautious. So the bottom line is, you're absolutely right, that you might have had a big giveaway last year. I mean, the headline in the next day after the budget last year, Anton, was the 10 billion euro voter bribe, you know, and it was ahead of an election. So we got goodies aplenty. I mean, the list is long. You know, there was double child payments, energy credits, there was fuel allowance increases, there was increases in the main tax credits, the standard rate cut-off points increased by 2,000 euros. It was a flurry of stuff. This year, it's nothing like that. We'd be lucky if we get a small increase in the tax credits. I mean, the tax credit is the amount of income you can earn before you pay tax, and there might be a small increase in the what they call the standard rate cut-off point. That's to do with your income tax. It's how much you can earn at the lower 20% rate before you go up onto the 40% rate. Beyond that, there may be some small, you know, they'll have to keep the VAT on energy. It's at a reduced rate temporarily. That's due to run out next month, 9%. It's due to go back up to 13.5%. Now, I think it'd be very unwise to touch that, given that hospitality is being promised a VAT rate cut. So, I mean, you know, if you've gas and electricity, that's probably about 50, 60 euros a year. It's not huge, but I think people will be most annoyed. So they'll have to keep that. Could be anywhere between 120 and 200 million of a cost. So they'll need to keep that temporary 9% VAT rate on energy for at least another year. They may pay some small amount of energy credits. I'm hearing a figure of 80 euros. It's not huge, Anton, but it's better than nothing, I suppose, you know. Beyond that, the pensioners, social welfare people got 12 euros last year. This year, 10 euros maybe is what economists are telling me. But we don't really know, obviously, and it's probably not decided, but they probably have to give something there to the pensioners and social welfare people, given that, you know, 300,000 people in energy arrears, for example, and we have a panel, as we just discussed, energy going up. So, yeah, not a lot, but there will be little bits and pieces, I think.
Charlie, thank you very much. That is Charlie Weston of the Irish Independent. Anton, how in an economy that has 2% inflation are companies allowed to increase critical prices like electricity by double figures in 1 year? Crazy stuff. And other regulators just put prices up. Absolutely no thoughts for mere consumers. 53106 if you view, or 087-1400-106. The one thing we didn't talk about, Jack, when we were discussing the presidential election was Bertie Ahern's evident bitterness. Bertie has now done the voice note video thing for 35 minutes explaining his thinking, and he has done interviews on it. Bertie Ahern is not a man known for regularly saying things publicly that he hasn't thought through.
Correct.
Why is he doing all of this?
Well, Bertie, we were saying this before, and Bertie Ahern is many things to many people, but he is a consummate politician, and he understands the art of politics and the art of sticking a knife in. you know, and I think that that's what he's done to an extent here. He did this interview yesterday. There's a few interesting things in it. First of all, and this is something that Shane Ross was writing about recently as well, he gave an indication of the extent of preparation he'd done for his presidential bid. You know, a big campaign team, lots of plans and so on. Now, I had always been of the view that when he was publicly flirting with the idea, it was more out of mischief than anything else, but he seems to have had real intent behind this. Secondly, he let it be known that nobody from the Fianna Fáil leadership had been in touch.
Plenty of people has from the repeated
back,
that.
Plenty of people from the backbenches onto him. You know, the hint there that there's a grassroots support for Bertie Ahern. And I think that's true. I think a lot of Fianna Fáil people do still have an attachment to Bertie Ahern and the Bertie Ahern era and the electoral success that it brought. Thirdly, he did not endorse Jim Gavin. And I think that's where that kind of that edge comes in, you know, like he said, I'd never run as an independent because I'm a Fianna Fáil man, you know, and as I said, there's still an emotional connection to Bertie Ahern. He still speaks, if not for a part of the party membership, I think he speaks to them. And this none too subtle signal that Fianna Fáil's man in this election is not Bertie Ahern's man, I think is a classic political play that I think will, you know, it's not going to implode the Jim Gavin campaign, but it's not going to help it.
So this is all dishes served cold, Lynn,
oh,
yeah?
Well, I mean, I was driving yesterday when it was on and we're just going, oh my God, if you didn't listen to it, listen back, because it was, yeah, a masterstroke of Bertie really sticking the knife in to Micheál Martin. And I'd say both Micheál Martin and Jim Gavin will be very, very upset with that interview yesterday. Because, yeah, it was appealing to those old Fianna Fáilers who, you know, still have a lot of time for Bertie Ahern. I mean, I personally don't and will never forgive him for his role in the economic crash. But there are a lot of old school Fianna Fáil people who really respect Bertie Ahern. That message to them yesterday was that Micheál Martin has disrespected him, has still not picked up the phone to him. That, yes, other members of the parliamentary party have all come to Bertie, you know, and kind of expressed their, you know, lack of approval of the way that he's been treated. And then for him to not endorse Jim Gavin was really the final nail in the coffin.
What was it he said? I'll keep my to the sanctity of the ballot box, wasn't that it?
Well, he followed. He kind of went, first of all, that when he was asked about Jim Gavin, he said, well, I will see who's the contesting the election. He said, I'll wait and see how it plays out, you know. And then I think maybe there was a little bit of doubt and then he kind of went, oh, maybe I've gone too far. And he sort of then said, oh, well, I'll, of course, you know, the sanctity of the ballot. But the damage was done at that point because, I mean, surely...
Bertie's a campaigning politician. He knows exactly what an intervention like this does to momentum, you know, and... You know,
but I can't wrap my head around, how did he think that he would, that the leadership of Fianna Fáil could have put themselves in a position where all of the baggage that comes with Bertie, whether it be the tribunals, whether it be the economic crash, all of that stuff, where they would have to attach themselves to it anew. How was that ever a runner?
It never was. It never was.
But he clearly thought it was.
He clearly thought it was, and I think that probably speaks to a couple of things. The fact that, you know, he knows that he's a talented campaigning politician and he wants one more shot to prove that, you know, this is a guy with a general election record like almost no other in the history of the state. And secondly, I think he wanted to restore his reputation. This was about, you know, the first line of Bertie Ahern's obit not being, you know, or maybe not the first line, but certainly the first couple of paragraphs not being about the Mahon Tribunal and the economic crash, you know.
The bank account and all of that story that we all remember. But
would it not have had the exact opposite effect? Would all of that not have been reventilated?
Of course, we would have loved if it was Bertie Ahern running. I think everybody would be going, that's great. I mean, that's a very easy campaign then to dismantle. I think the key issue here is, though, that the lack of respect that Micheál Martin has shown, not just to Bertie Ahern, but to Mary Hanafin, to Billy Kelleher, because he clearly had this idea that he was going to go out and approach Jim Gavin. I mean, that was in the making, but he didn't have the respect to just pick up the phone and say to these people who are out publicly, you know, saying, I'm interested. If someone comes to me in Fianna Fáil, I'm up for it. And he didn't say to them, listen, folks, it's not a runner. We're going with a different direction. And that would have just killed all of that off. But instead, all through the summer, Mary Hanafin was running around the country telling people she's ready to run. Bertie was saying he's ready to run. Clearly, Bertie was putting together a campaign. And then Billy Kelleher throws his name in the hat. So these are all Fianna Fáil to the core, elected or formerly elected representatives who've been treated terribly by the Taoiseach, the leader of Fianna Fáil, and he's gone with somebody who was approached by Fine Gael to run in the European elections. So, I mean, it's not a good day for Micheál Martin.
Before we wrap up, want to, Lynn, just get a reaction to you from the news breaking overnight on two fronts in respect of security. The first being the NATO warplanes being scrambled to respond to Russian jets in Estonian airspace. And the second being the cybersecurity attacks on European airports. Now, to that second one, we don't know from whence that comes. But, you know, you wouldn't have to infer too much to make a fairly good guess at it. How concerned would you be by that ramping up of pressure on NATO, of incursions across the border, of general chaos?
I mean, it's deeply concerning, of course. I mean, and Putin is a very dangerous individual. But my concern is that the strategy being pursued by the EU of tooling up and going all gung-ho and militarization is really playing into the hands of Putin, because that's what he uses as the excuse for all of this aggression tactics, is that, you know what I mean, he's being attacked, or he, you know, they're basically lining up all of the weapons on the borders, and that Russia has to, you know, defend itself, or whatever logic he applies. So I think, you know, what I would really like to see from the EU is a really, you know, peace process and real seriousness put to trying to get Putin, Zelensky round the table and trying to get some sort of a peace process thrashed out. Because at the end of the day, that is where we will end up. At some point, there will have to be a peace process. But so many people have lost their lives in this.
When an aggressor rolls tanks, artillery, infantry across your country to your capital city and attempts to murder your president, you can't immediately go peace process, can you?
No, you can't. But at some point, all wars end in a peace process. I mean, that is what happens. But like,
usually when one side is the victor.
Thousands of people have lost their lives. I mean, young Ukrainian men are cannon fodder. I mean, we're seeing casualty rates like we haven't seen in recent times at all. So, I mean, I've met with Ukrainian refugees who are here, who, you know, came when their sons were 12, 13, and they're terrified of going back because their sons are now of the age that they wouldn't be allowed to return back to Ireland. They would be conscripted in. They don't want to send their children to fight. So, I mean, the point for me is this ramping up of militarization is playing into Putin's hands, and it's also going to cause a breakdown of social cohesion within the EU, because it means lack of funding to all of the other really important funding streams that we have in the EU. So we're going to see more far right, more social cohesion breakdown, and Putin pointing, going, I told you so, I'm under attack. And wrongly, as I said, I'm not defending Putin, but that's the excuse he used back in 2015.
Text to say, Bertie Hearn should take a look at Enda Kenny, a man who did the state some service and then left the office with a bit of grace and dignity. 53106, if you want to get in touch, or 087-1400-106. Lynn Boylan, thank you very much. Likewise, Jack Horgan-Jones, Jack being political correspondent with the Irish Times, Lynn Sinn Féin, MEP for Dublin.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.